Welcome, everybody, to the latest edition of the Polish Guy Podcast. And, you know, this is the, as said on the website, this is the playoff extravaganza. Well, just for the first round, I plan to do this every week for the NFL playoffs because, after all, this, for many people, is the greatest time of year. Personally, no, it's still the World Series. I'm one of the four or five people that still believe that. But I love football, and I appreciate what's going to get ratings, and that's always going to be football. But before we do get into the first round of the playoffs and go through some really detailed good stuff about each of these games, including my own predictions on the game, the Baseball Hall of Fame yesterday took a left turn away from what everyone thought they were going to do. After waiting quite a few years, Andre Dawson finally got into the Hall of Fame. See, I don't know a lot about Andre Dawson. I can only go on stats. I vaguely remember him. I remember him as the aging ball player that played for the Marlins and the Red Sox. I remember the guy with bad knees whose knee surgeries finally took their toll on him. Other people who saw him play between 1977 and 1990 remember a different Andre Dawson. They remember a five-tool player, a guy who could grab a base if he wanted to, could hit a home run, get a key hit, run the base as well, was a great fielder and had a great arm. But there's one thing I can't see. Personally, Andre Dawson, my memories of him are very succinct in that time period is because when he was with the Florida Marlins was actually the first year I started playing Strat-O-Matic with my buddy Travis over the summer. And I remember all we played was a 20-game season. And for those of you not familiar with Strat-O-Matic, it's a great baseball simulation game. It also proves here on the podcast that I am a complete dork. I'm fine with that. I'm good with it. But I will never forget that in our 20-game season for the Marlins, Andre Dawson came up with key hit after key hit for that team, and they were terrible. They were still basically an expansion team at the time. It was before that they took the plunge and basically bought themselves a World Series a couple of years after that. But you know, I'll always remember Andre the Hawk as you know, being 14, 15 years old and me and my buddies down in the basement screaming out, "The Hawk!" But the unfortunate reality about the Hawk is what sort of statement it makes about baseball itself and where we are. Look, numbers are numbers. They do count. You know, a lot of guys are great with the aesthetics and they look good while playing. And they had better numbers than Dawson, and some of those guys are in the Hall of Fame, some of them aren't. You know, Ron Santo has similar numbers, he's not in the Hall of Fame. Billy Williams has similar numbers, but he is in the Hall of Fame. But Andre Dawson had a .323 on-base percentage. It's 20 points lower than Lou Brock, who is at .343. .323 is just a terrible on-base percentage for a Hall of Famer. A regular guy in the league can get away with that. There's been several players that played several years with that on-base percentage. Obviously, Andre Dawson did with it. But, you know, I have a problem not with Andre Dawson getting in. I have a problem with the statements that it's making and the realities it shows about the Baseball Writers Association. In general, I still believe in just the basic sniff test theory. You know, if you throw a name out and you throw it to 10 different people in a just a quick fire response, if 7 out of 10 of those people say yes for a Hall of Fame, then the guy's a Hall of Famer. You know, some people have biases and all that type of thing, so it can't be 100%. Never could be that. even Willie Mays didn't get in on 100% of his first-year ballots. So just to show you how that impossible that is. Now, the voting is obviously flawed. Someone like Dawson getting in, who definitely is a fringe type of guy, shows how scared voters are going to be to go for steroid guys in the future. To me, Mark McGwire is a Hall of Famer because of what he... Look, as unreal as it was, he still brought something to the game and was a great hitter during his time. And many people think that 1998 may have saved baseball. I can't completely ignore that and say, like, this guy probably was doing something he shouldn't have been done, something that was illegal according to the federal government and baseball rules. But again, now we know that there was plenty of people using, and his numbers were greater than the greatest then. To me, that's still extraordinarily great, which is supposed to be, you know, to me, that's part of the criteria of being in the Hall of Fame. Now, I'm not going to go on my old diatribe that I've had about the Baseball Hall of Fame, about how flawed it is, how it can't even name itself correctly. But what I will tell you about this voting process is that there's better players than Andre Dawson that were on that ballot yesterday, and they didn't get nearly the votes they deserve. Roberto Alomar somehow didn't get in. Now, some of the things I've read about this is Roberto Alomar didn't get in because there's this unwritten rule about players shouldn't be getting in the first year unless they are truly spectacular, truly epic as a player. You know, that's saved for the Ricky Hendersons and the Ty Cobbs and Babe Ruths. And coincidentally, Babe Ruth didn't even get 100% of the vote either in the initial Hall of Fame vote. Anyway, now, Roberto Alomar did just miss. But the reason he missed is because of this archaic thinking that is holding baseball back in the first place. Now, I will be posting the original podcast on baseball, steroids, and my general ideas on the Hall of Fame and how it needs to be, one way it needs to be changed, again in the next week, so you guys can hear all that again. But this first year bias is absolutely silly. I mean, who cares? Now, here's the thing that might happen. Someone like Roberto Alomar has a year where, admittedly, it's not the greatest group of guys to see on a ballot. After all, Davis Segee was on the ballot this year, okay? He was a nice player every now and then, and also an admitted steroid user, by the way. But this is definitely a year that someone like Roberto Alomar should have gotten in because he might be pushed to the side as other great names in the next 5 years pop up. You know, Randy Johnson just retired, so in 5 years we're going to have him on the ballot. You know, it's just archaic philosophy and all these pats on the back type of deals that seems to be rampant in the Baseball Players Baseball Writers Association. It just boggles my mind. I mean, there's you know, you can't always rely on statistics. So maybe that is how Andre Dawson got in. But it also is silly to rely on statistics on guys that absolutely should be in, and you point at certain things that are wrong, and they say, oh, well, this guy shouldn't be in. I'm getting a Burt Blylevin. The guy won the most 1-0 games in the modern era. Joe Pesnansky has a great article about this. But he's considered a compiler. But the guys he was compiling against, the top pitchers, were all Hall of Famers. The guys that he was trying to be out for Cy Youngs and ERA titles and all of that was guys like Jim Palmer, Tom Seaver, Steve Carlton, Catfish Hunter. These are all Hall of Famers. You got to be kidding me that just because the 5 or 6 guys ahead of him got in the Hall of Fame that, oh, well, he's the cutoff. You know, it's just sad that guys like Burt Blyleven, Roberto Alomar, they're not going to be in the Hall of Fame this year, because some people want to make statements. Some people have backroom deals. You know, when you have backroom deals and archaic philosophies and unwritten rules, when you shouldn't have unwritten rules, the Hall of Fame shouldn't be a political thing. It should be something that recognizes the greatest players of a particular sport. That's what it is. Now, you could interpret it that which way you will, but obviously you're not going to have the worst players in there. You're going to have the best. So, to have the Hall of Fame hamstrung by politics, and one of my immutable laws of life is that if politics are involved, it's corrupt in some way. Therefore, the Baseball Writers Association is corrupt in some way, and this is just, it's sad to me, and, you know, again, if you want to hear the whole spiel again on that, I am going to be posting again within the week, but I'm just disappointed in the Baseball Hall of Fame yesterday. I'm not disappointed for Andre Dawson. Everything I read about him that I didn't understand, it shows what a fine player he was. But you got to tell me that for some years, I don't think he was even the best player on his team, and that would have been Tim Raines. You know, if Andre Dawson is getting in, and Roberto Alomar, and Burt Blyleven, and Tim Raines are going to have to be the victims, then I don't want any part of what I'm seeing here. So, that's it on that. We're going to move on to the NFL playoffs. I'm going to go game by game. I'm going to give some ideas of I'm just going to use the eight teams that are playing this weekend. We'll get the other four teams involved next weekend. But there's some striking things that I just want to make clear to everybody. I use a lot of these stats from Football Outsiders, and if you're not familiar with Football Outsiders, you really should. They have great statistics on football. Essentially, they rate teams based on how the teams do on average versus every single NFL play of the year. For instance, if the average draw play of the entire NFL gains 5 yards, and one team gains 5.5 for the whole year, they get a plus efficiency. If they're lower, they get a negative efficiency. Overall, they take everything in account, position by position, cornerbacks, everybody. They take in account the entire team, and you get a rating throughout the year. The first thing I saw about their ratings this year that shocked me. I thought they were good, but what shocked me, Baltimore Ravens were number one on their list this year. And they're the team with the worst record ever to be number one on their list in the years that they've been doing it. And one thing they pointed out is that, in general, penalties do not hurt a team overall. It's something that evens out. The Ravens, though, managed to be a team to lose a lot of games due to penalties and untimely things occurring, which we're going to get to more a little bit. But, you know, just want to make that clear. And again, I'm a person who's obsessed with line play. I really do believe that in the NFL, that line play is the key to everything. You cannot have an Emmitt Smith without that line in front of him. You cannot have a good cover two scheme without a pass rush in front of it. It starts in the trenches and then moves outward. The trenches are the center of the circle. Everything else is outward. And the most important player of the field still is the quarterback. That is just how I feel about football. So I'm going to give you something interesting. By the way, in the rankings, you can see why these are the 12 playoff teams, and you can see why these eight teams are in the playoffs. Especially when you look at the specific rankings overall. For the O-line and D-line, the best overall team, Baltimore is number two on the O-line play and number one on the D-line play. Meanwhile, teams at the bottom of this, the worst team based on this, is Cincinnati, was eighth out of the eight teams playing this weekend on the O-line, and they're seventh on the D-line. that was obviously affected by the injury to Odom, Antoine Odom, who looked like he was going to have a breakout season, and really, in fact, seemed like he was before he had his devastating injury. Another thing that doesn't bode well for the former three-time world champs, New England is last in D-line play. Everyone else is about in the middle. Philadelphia is most consistent because they're fourth in both categories. Now, the way the NFL ranks everything, in total offense, Dallas is number one. Total defense, of course, it's New York. Found that somewhat interesting, though. Cincinnati and New York, they're facing each other this weekend, and they were 24th and 20th, respectively, in total offense. So high-scoring game, my prediction, will not be that. Now I'm just going to go by each matchup and how I feel about it. The Jets and Bengals. Now, the conventional wisdom is that we have three matchups here, and the conventional wisdom is that you have to throw out everything you saw from the Week 17 games, because certain teams in each of those games weren't really putting out their best efforts, with the argument being against it is that Philadelphia did and they were terrible. But in general, most of the time you throw everything out. I disagree. I think you can find little things in the games that are very interesting. The Jets simply did what they always do, and the Bengals had no answer for it, and then their defense was just suffocating on Carson Palmer. Look, the Bengals were trying in that first half of that game, and they left Carson Palmer left the game in the third quarter when the team had about, I don't know, a dozen net yards, something like that. It was a bad number. I know that Palmer started 1 for 10 for 0 yards, I think. It was a 0 yard completion. So, you know, Cincinnati, let's do some little team capsules that gets you a feel for each team and how they are right now. Cincinnati, of course, they're 6-0 in their own division. They have a great team to beat to win in that division. They're physical, they're tough. They finally have a good defense, and they finally have a physical running game that rules in the AFC Central. Overall, they were 20th in they're 20th in the Pro Football Outsiders rankings. They're 19th on offense, 13th in defense. They were 22nd against the run, according to the Pro Football Outsiders, and their special teams was only 21st in the league. They were 3-2 versus playoff teams. Their big victory was a 31-24 victory over Green Bay, and that was before, I believe that was either the game before Odom went down or Odom had 2 sacks and went down in that game. I can't remember for sure. I'm pretty sure, though, that that was one of the last hurrahs for Antoine Odom this year. Now, the revitalization of Larry Johnson shows how great the team really has been running the football overall. Efficiency-wise, according to Football Outsiders, they are only ranked 13th, but really, we all know that Carson Palmer wasn't the same quarterback this year. He was barely over 3,000 yards in the season. He just looked plain terrible at times. And at this point, with the late Chris Henry, with Reggie Kelly hurt, he only has one receiver. Okay, this is where I really think the crux of this game is going to be. But he only has one receiver, and that's Chad Ochocinco. I'm not sure if I can call him Ochocinco. It's just wrong. 85 is Ochocinco. But Larry Johnson has averaged 4.4 yards a rush since he became a Bengal. And Cincinnati comes in this game, they're banged up. They got injuries to Odom, Maluga, who in my opinion was their most consistent linebacker, Sims, Crocker might be injured, Roy Williams is out, their big blocking tight end was hurt in the preseason, Reggie Kelly, that never helped things. Somehow they still ran the ball effectively without him, but you know, Reggie Kelly was a pretty good blocking tight end. The Jets, well, they're an interesting team. Pro Football Outsiders show them as the 10th ranked team overall. And of course, they were 28th in the pass. I don't think anyone's shocked by that. Mark Sanchez proved that he doesn't like wind, he doesn't like cold. He generally doesn't like throwing the football forward at all, at least not to his own colors. He's a big fan of the other colors. 20 interceptions on the year, and down the stretch when they won 5-6, they pretty much took the ball out of Sanchez's hands and gave it down to their three-headed giant backfield of Brad Smith, Sean Green, and Thomas Jones. And I can only imagine what they'd be if they had a four-headed giant. Leon Washington wasn't hurt for this team. Now, the most interesting stat that the Football Outsiders came up with that I felt was that New York was 32nd in defensive variance, which means variance is exactly how it sounds like. How the team has played, how much the team varied each week from their averages on the season. And New York, what this tells you that if they're 32nd in defensive variance, it means that they either got killed or they absolutely dominated you on defense. And a lot of times they absolutely dominated because they finished first in the total defense according to the NFL. They finished first in total defense according to Football Outsiders. They're first against the pass. They're eighth against the run. And they've won five of the last six. They've only allowed 47 points in those games. Granted, they haven't faced great teams in that. Their signature win this season, I think, was week two when they completely shut down New England 16-9. And offensively, New England is the first-ranked offense, according to the Football Outsiders. So, you know, they finished 3-2 versus playoff teams. Thomas Jones had a career-high 1,402 yards. My Chicago Bears still miss him. I'm going to make this real easy. This is what I got from that game. The Bengals are just too banged up. And there's the strength that they have left in their team is their ability of their secondary to cover. I don't see that secondary as a great run defense secondary, as shown by the rankings of Cincinnati being 22nd against the run, according to Football Outsiders. And, yeah, I just don't think that the Jets will do. We all know what the Jets are going to do, and I don't think the Bengals are going to stop it. They are now banged up on the defensive line. They lost their most consistent linebacker. They lost their best pass rusher early in the season. Their pass coverage in the secondary, which is their strength, they're not going to be able to use their strength. That's the problem. It's great to have a strength, but the Jets are just going to pound, pound, pound. They're going to use the three guys in the backfield. They're going to do some play action, some easy stuff over the middle. You know, just simple stuff. They're not going to allow Sanchez to beat them and to lose the game. And Darrelle Revis is the best cover corner in the league. He's going to take Ochente Cinco out of the game. And Palmer will have no one to throw to. Really, Andre Caldwell is going to take over this game? I don't think so. The only way I see the Bengals winning this game is if they get up early and the Jets are forced to pass. Then it's all over. You can throw everything out the window. I'm going to go on the other side of this, say that's not going to happen. I think Cincinnati peaked too early. I think they lost too many guys. I'm going to take New York 17-7 in this one. Next AFC game, we got the Patriots versus the Baltimore Ravens. Now, the Ravens, again, I've already touched on this a little bit. They're actually first overall in rankings. They're, surprisingly to me, they're eighth in offense. I thought Flacco was pretty shaky most of the year. Of course, they're fourth running the football, Ray Rice, McLean and McGahee, but it's really Ray Rice nowadays. Let's not get too excited over some reanimation of McGahee's corpse last game against the Raiders. He's not going to be one that's going to decide this game. It's going to be Ray Rice. He's a two-way threat out of the backfield. Bill Belichick is going to have to figure out a way with his defense to keep him in check. And, you know, they were fourth in offensive variance, so they're actually pretty consistently good on offense, and I got to attribute all of that to Ray Rice. I mean, there's some games, Ray Rice, you know, only 6 yards rushing, but then he had 90 yards receiving, and he had a score. You know, that was a typical Ray Rice game, you know, 140 combined yards, a touchdown. Gotta love that from your running back all the time. Not surprisingly, New England is the number one ranked offense according to the Football Outsider rankings. They're the second best passing team. This surprises no one. You know, New England comes in, they're 2-3 against playoff teams. Now, one of those wins was against Baltimore in the regular season, and that was due to a drop pass by a good old Derek Mason, who was begged out of retirement. And unfortunately, it's one of the signature moments of the year for actually the Patriots. Now, the Patriots didn't beat a lot of good teams. They won their rematch against the Jets in a very good game. I mean, they played one of their best games of the year that day. The Patriots, I think, are quite banged up, despite what Bill Belichick says. There's two Bills that know a lot about the New England Patriots. One is Bill Belichick, and the other one is Bill Simmons. You know who I'm going to believe at this point in time? I'm going to believe Bill Simmons over Bill Belichick when it comes to past injuries. On a recent podcast, Bill Simmons mentioned injuries for Tom Brady, and pretty significant ones at that. So I'm going to believe Bill Simmons. Now, so far, I've got all this skewed on the Ravens' side. The only thing that I found interesting about the Ravens is that they were 1-6 against playoff teams. They only lost those six games by a combined 36 points. Their one win, though, was against San Diego. Now, they could be the kryptonite for San Diego. My prediction is not that they're not going to get that chance. I think here's the thing. Pro Football Outsiders thinks the Ravens are the best team this year. The Patriots are banged up. They can't run when they need to. Bill Belichick has become pretty vanilla in his schemes. They just lost their best receiver. So I'm going to go the exact opposite of what everyone else is starting to think in this game. I'm going to say the Patriots are going to pull out this game. They're going to win it 28-20. Now, I'm going to tell you this about the Ravens. One thing scared me about the 1-6 record against playoff teams. The 36 points that they lost those games by told me they lost a lot of close games. Now, how they lost those games was overall pass defense and clutch times and big times in the game. Clutch kicking and untimely penalties, especially in the Pittsburgh game. I think it's possible that the Ravens on offense are just slightly too young to win a close game. And I think that's why they went 1-6 in those games. I think that's why you see they're a very, very strong team, according to Football Outsiders and a lot of people. But I don't think they're going to win this game because of that. I think that maybe their downfall is that on offense they are too young. In defense, especially in the secondary, they're in a period of transition. And they just cannot completely dominate a game all the way through. Although, they are still awesome. They're still a good team and great defensively. But this isn't the 2000 Ravens. This is a better team offensively, a worse team defensively, but much less experience. So I'm going to say experience wins out. Patriots again, 28-20. Now the Eagles and the Dallas Cowboys. This was the hardest one to pick for me. Philadelphia, one of their red flags, they were 0-4 against playoff teams this year. They were 2 losses to Dallas. They were killed by New Orleans when New Orleans still knew what they were doing on offense or just overall. New Orleans comes in going 13-0 and then losing the last three and just completely losing their identity. I don't get what happened to it. Week 10, everyone thinks Sean Payton is the next genius of the world. And now, I'm not even sure if that team knows who they are. It's very interesting there. But overall, Philadelphia, as you would expect, good offensively. Third overall in the rankings, 10th offensively, 12th passing, which shows a little bit of the inconsistency of Donovan McNabb, which I'm sure Philadelphia fans are well aware of. And surprisingly, they're 5th running the football, which shows you how good of a season that people didn't talk about that LeSean McCoy really did have with Brian Westbrook fighting his concussion problems that... I just hope he doesn't become another Merrill Hodge story. I don't want to hear the next story of Brian Westbrook Nina being revived in the locker room or revived in an ambulance so he can continue living. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. Let's hope that Westbrook walks away from the game while he still has some marbles remaining. Amazingly, Hodge has proven that he has plenty of marbles left even after all that with being on the Great Show NFL matchup. But overall, just don't want to see the guy turn to mush. Now, not surprisingly, they were 2nd in special teams rankings, and that's all DeSean Jackson. DeSean Jackson is just a lightning rod of... he is the whole reason the Eagles have their identity of having a quick strike offense. That's what he is. He's a quick strike player. He's just amazing. He didn't get the chance to show that in the last week of the season, and Dallas dominated that game. And I know Philadelphia was definitely trying for a good portion of that game, and unfortunately, McNabb just played terrible. Now again, on to Dallas. Dallas 3-2 against playoff teams. They lost to San Diego, and they lost to Green Bay. It was a low-scoring game against Green Bay. And, of course, Dallas would want you to believe that Roy Williams is still a number one receiver. Of course he's not. Anyone who's watched these games in any earnest knows that Jason Witten, Miles Austin are the true threats to this team. And they also have a great combination of players in the backfield as well. Dallas is one of those teams that just needs to play to its level. And they can win the Super Bowl this year if they play to the level. They've beat Philly twice. So where am I going with this? I'm going Philly 24, Dallas 20, Philly 27, Dallas 24. I don't see Philadelphia playing that badly. If the same McNabb shows up, obviously the Eagles are dead in the water. I don't think it's going to happen. There's one fact that I can't get over about this game is that Andy Reid has never lost in the first round of the playoffs, and the other coach is Wade Phillips. Now, Wade seems like a really nice guy. He knows what he's doing on the defensive side of the ball. I think this is going to be just one of those crazy, the happiest team is going to be the team facing the Eagles or Dallas next week because these teams are going to just have completely nothing left for next week. I don't know how they make a run. I just don't see it. I know I said Dallas could make a run, but what I think is going to happen is that neither of these teams is going to make a run because whoever does come out of this game is going to have nothing left. But this is going to be a great game. This is the game that everyone should DVR and probably going to need to watch 5 times. Of course, now it's probably going to be 28-0 since I said this, but screw it. I think this is going to be one of those crazy games. There might be a 4th-and-26 for you Eagles fans out there. There might be a drop snap for you Cowboys fans out there. There might be terrible clock management. Oh, wait. With Andy Reid and Wade... Okay, there will be terrible clock management in this game. That in itself is going to be fun. So even if it's 28-0, whatever coach would be losing 28-0 will find a way to badly manage the clock. I guarantee that. There will be bad clock management in this game. So if nothing else, even if it's a blowout, I'm completely wrong about this one. Just watch how funny the clock management will be. I just think the Eagles in this game is going to find a way to gather momentum with one of their patented quick strikes. Maybe it's DeSean Jackson. Maybe it's anybody else. It's, of course, most likely going to be DeSean Jackson. But I just think they're going to gather momentum with one of their quick strikes, and they're going to ride the wave to victory, and they're going to find a way to do it. And again, Andy Reid has never lost on first round of playoffs. Of course, look, that's not mutually exclusive. Of course, one season has nothing to do with the other, but somehow that is true. So I'm going to go with it again for one more year. And the last game of the day, of the weekend that I would like to talk about, of course, is the Packers and the Cardinals. Now, the great thing about Football Outsiders and other things when you really start looking at stats as a whole is how teams can be explained. None of this is more true than when I look across the board for the Arizona Cardinals. Now, I'm just going to read this, and let's just figure this out together, what sounds most interesting about this. Overall rankings, 13th. Overall offense, 13th. 14th passing the ball, 16th running the football. Defensively, 12th overall, 12th against the pass, 14th against the run. Special teams, 11th. Figure it out yet? Not a single thing is in the top 10. Not a single ranking is in the bottom 10. They are completely in the middle with everything they do. And I'm going to pull the Adam Carolla and the most shocking thing that I saw was that they were 28th in offensive variance. Really? So you're telling me? Oh, by the way, the only teams worse in variance offensively, Carolina, Tampa Bay, Jacksonville, Oakland. I didn't see a playoff team there. Okay, let's go over to the Green Bay side for a second here. Green Bay, they're ranked second offensively. Ranked second overall, fourth offensively. Couple of things. They're 31st in defensive variance. Now, and I think that has everything to do with how they're completely inconsistent defensively at the beginning of the season. Now, the other couple of things that were interesting is I found out that Ryan Grant actually ran for 1,232 yards this season. I couldn't believe it. Same Ryan Grant, and he averaged 4.4 a carry. They were actually second in efficiency in running the football, which just shows you how scared teams were of Aaron Rodgers and that receiving core that he has. They were just so effective when they actually did run the football. And Aaron Rodgers has the highest QB rating of any first-round team. Now, again, everyone here knows that who's been listening for a while knows that I feel the QB rating is completely flawed. But it doesn't matter to me in this. The Packers are 7-1 in their last 8 games. They lost the only game they did lose. They lost that in the final play of the game on just an amazing play by Ben Roethlisberger and actually, I just thought it was a terrible defensive call by the Packers on that game. I don't know how anybody got singled up on the outside at all. They were 3-3 against playoff teams. They lost to the Bengals in Week 2, and the before-mentioned Bengals victory, maybe signature victory of the year. The other two losses were to the Vikings. And, of course, one of those wins was just against Arizona. Now, here's where I think the difference in this game might be. Arizona had a lot of fumbles this season. The Packers' defense has been one that has thrived off of turnovers, especially with the reemergence of Charles Woodson of being a defensive MVP candidate. The Packers have fixed many of the things that plagued them the first half of the season. But Arizona had 20 fumbles in their backfield this year. They had over one fumble per game by either Tim Hightower, Beanie Wells, or Kurt Warner. Let's see, over one fumble a game versus a team defense that thrives on creating turnovers. To me, that does not sound good for Arizona. Now, Arizona is the most crazy team, up and down team in the NFL. We know that. They absolutely can make a run. We all know they have the talent to do so. I think Green Bay's too hot. They could come out and slaughter the Pack at home, but as I said, they've fixed many of the things that plagued them the first half. Now they have one of the best defenses. They have one of the best scoring offenses the second half of the year, and they have an underrated overall scheme defensively. The Cardinals cannot have even a sliver of their schizophrenia to win, and they cannot turn the ball over or give a chance to turn the ball over with one of their prototypical fumbles in the backfield. They could win. I don't feel they will. I'm going to take Green Bay 31, Arizona 21. And that's it. You know, I went against the grain a little bit. I picked three away teams, and normally that's a sin if you're a gambler out there. But I'm sorry. That's the way I see it. Just looking back real quick, just so everybody, you know, just a little mea culpa, but thankfully I don't have to admit to too many wrongdoings. It turns out in our NFL preview that we were 8 of 12 in the teams to make the playoffs. Unfortunately, my NFC Championship game of Green Bay, New York can't possibly happen. We correctly picked Green Bay, Dallas, Minnesota, and Arizona. We incorrectly picked New York and Atlanta. And, of course, Philadelphia and New Orleans filled those spots. Atlanta finished 9-7 on the year. So they didn't quite live up to expectations that we had. Now, we had San Diego as the number one seed in the AFC. And, you know, we came close to having that occur if it wasn't for Indianapolis having their great year. We were correct on New England, Indianapolis, Baltimore, and San Diego. We were incorrect on Houston and Pittsburgh. As usual, Houston had their late season surge that was too late to make the playoffs. So we got Cincinnati and the Jets wrong, and one of those teams is going to lose. The AFC Championship game that we had earlier this year was New England-Baltimore. Obviously, they're facing each other this weekend. So overall, the picks, Jets 17-7, New England 28-20, Philadelphia 27-24, and the Cardinals losing to the Packers 31-21. Now, wanted to give a quick word on the obvious Model American of the Week. And I just want to give a great honor to Gilbert Arenas, who apparently doesn't see how bringing guns to work is a bad idea. Now, I'm going to try not to break this down step by step, but I just want to say something to the people who think that Gilbert Arenas shouldn't lose his job and shouldn't lose his contract. There are some people out there saying that. If I take a gun to work, I am absolutely fired. I am definitely breaking a law, especially if they're unregistered, which I'm not sure if his were or weren't. There was a report that they were registered, then there was a report that they weren't registered. I'm sure it will all shake itself out. I want to applaud David Stern for doing what he did yesterday and suspending him indefinitely. You just can't. can't make jokes with guns. That is one of the worst alibis I've ever heard in my life. I was just playing a joke on him. Really? Your jokes are about guns? You got problems. And because he has problems, David Stern decided that you're not going to take an NBA court. I applaud him for that. Gilbert Arenas, you are a fun guy to listen to. And until this time, I thought maybe you're just a Chad Johnson or a Chente Cinco type of guy. Now you're just a nutbag. The reason he took said guns to work is because he just had a baby, his third, and he decided that he didn't want the guns in the house anymore. So he felt that the NBA locker room was the safest place to go. I don't think so. And just to prove how much he is just completely delusional about the entire situation, he goes out and makes gun shooting hand gestures in a pregame huddle before the next game after the report came out. Not the smartest move, my friend. So, Gilbert Arenas. You're Model American of the Week. And I'm going to leave everyone with a national championship prediction for tonight, which should begin in a couple hours. By the time most people hear this, the game will be over. But I'm going to go ahead and, just for fun, I don't really know much about this game. I didn't follow college football as much as I normally do this year. But I will say that I'll go ahead and take the upset. Why not? I read somewhere that the Texas kicker is a pretty clutch guy, so I'll go with him. I'm going to go Texas 23, Alabama 21. So again, this is the Polish guy signing off for this week. Expect another podcast next week with more NFL news. We're going to go over some of the coaching hires, fires, and feelings on that. And we'll go on to the second round of playoffs and what those matchups entail. And, maybe make fun of myself for being completely wrong. Or patting ourselves on the back for being completely right. Or, half right, at least. Something like that. All right, everybody, enjoy this great weekend of NFL football and tonight's national championship game of college football. See you next week. To whom much is given, much is tested. Get arrested, guess until he get the message. I feel the pressure under more scrutiny. And what I do, act more stupidly. Bought more jewelry, more Louis V. My mama couldn't get